Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The month of June is heating up with a ton of exciting sports action, and BetOnline is where you can find it. From basketball and hockey playoffs to baseball's marquee matchups, including prop bets and futures, BetOnline has all the latest odds, news, and information for all your online sports betting needs. So visit the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before the next tip-off, face-off, or pitch, head on over to BetOnline and start playing today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. Bill Roden, upstate New York, holding it down up here, and beautiful day in June, and holding it down downstate in the outer borough is my friend and colleague and co-host, the great Jamal Murphy. Murph!
What's up, Bill? Everything is good out here in Brooklyn. Typical, you know, June heat and humidity for the past week or so. My son had a Little League baseball game over the weekend, and it was blazing hot.
Wow!
And the game,
are they masked up?
Too long.
Are they playing with masks or without masks?
They are playing with masks. That's the official rule. But you know, here and there, kids will have it on their chin, or
right.
Sometimes a kid forgets a mask. You know.
Right. What was our friend last week we had on the doctor?
Dr. Fraser.
Dr. Fraser. Yeah, I'd like to hear that again. What was her general thing was, right, although it's like summertime and it's all good and everybody's skipping along and it's actually like there was never COVID, but she was kind of still a little skeptical, right?
Yeah, she was skeptical. I think she was a little less skeptical about the outside stuff. But she was definitely hesitant when it came to, you know, being, you know, full stadiums and,
yeah,
you know, that kind of thing where you're getting people in close quarters, some right. masks, some not, that type right. of thing.
Yeah. What's been your philosophy? What's your family philosophy?
We're, you know, and mostly due to my wife, we're on the cautious side always. So we pretty much have, you know, wherever we go, we have the masks at least very handy. Anytime we go inside, we're definitely wearing a mask. Outside, we have it just in case there are close quarters. But for the most part, it's me personally, I'm kind of lax when I'm outside. You know, I'll walk around with no mask or whatever. But let's say I pick up my son from school and all the kids in school have masks on. And so in that type of environment, I'll wear a mask.
Yeah, I walk around with a can of Raid. You know? Spraying motherfuckers. You know?
That's even better, Bill. That's
even better. Oh, man. Yeah. So, man, you know, we missed a week, but, you know, I've been listening to and watching the NBA playoffs. What's been your are you planning the parade route for the Nets? And remind me. I want to talk about this whole thing with what's the kid's name in Dallas?
Luka.
Well, I mean, I'm so happy this cat was eliminated. I mean, nothing. You know, again, you know, it's this whole Tarzan mentality. Whenever you have a white guy, and they kind of now embraced a European, because, well, American white guys are totally out of the whole NBA picture.
Well, there's one coming. He's like the just as an aside, the top high school player in the nation this year, going to Gonzaga next year, 7-footer who can do everything, white guy, Chet Holmgren. So again, it's coming again, Bill. Don't worry.
Get ready. Well, you know, it's, you know,
like you always say, it's not even, we're not even getting on the kid himself.
No, it's not about the player. It's the whole thing surrounding the player. It's this whole desperate need. Again, it's another version of white supremacy. And whenever you say white supremacy, I can hear, you know, if you ever get on a mainstream show, like one of the NBA shows, like, oh, there you go. Oh, you know, oh, what are you? I'm married to my woman. My wife is a woman of color, you know. That.
No, it's, you know, what's funny is, you know, how you always talk about every now and then we'll have this discussion and you mention, you know, you talk about the white broadcasters, the white radio hosts or whatever, and that they just, you know, they're just jerking off about over each other, right? And right. I was always like, oh, yeah, you know, that's you know, I was like, okay, you know, you're exaggerating a little bit, blah, blah, blah. But then I'm watching, I think a couple of weeks ago, I'm watching a baseball game on Fox, and it was like Atlanta Braves, like in the Mets or something like that. And I saw exactly what you were talking about. And I was like, oh, that's what Bill's talking about right there. So
what were they doing?
Yeah. So I'm watching the game, and this, the first baseman, Freddie Freeman for the Braves, very good player, been around for a while. Good player, white guy. And the way these guys were describing him, they were, you know, he was doing something. He was somebody else's play. And he was like joking, laughing with the guy on first base. And they were like, oh, Freddie Freeman, we just look at him. He gets along with everybody. Oh, he's so funny. Great. Just a great guy to be around. He's the greatest. You know, and he's like, you never seen him say that about like dudes of color. You know, what I'm saying? Really?
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, he's so great. Oh my God. He's the
kind of guy you like to have a drink with, you know. Invite him to the house, you know. It's amazing, you know, and it kind of gets back to Luka. And again, it's nothing necessarily to the player, you know, the player is just a beneficiary, but it's just surrounded by this white media. And then I've even seen some brothers. I mean, it's all this stuff is so subtle that to go along with this stuff, you kind of have to go along with it. You know, if you want to continue to have the gig and all that, you kind of have to, you know, kind of jump on the bandwagon. Right. And Luka is, I'm sorry, what do they do with this cat is eliminated? You know, that's why that series, it's been a long time since I was that involved in a series. I mean, this cat, they got to, because I cannot listen to this shit. I can't listen to any more of it,
but,
you know.
But guess what?
What?
You still will have to listen to it, because I know, just the other day, either on social media, you know, on the shows or whatever, people are already calling, you know, even before he lost, but even after he lost, they lost the series. People were saying, oh, well, you know, now Luka is the best player in the game now. And I'm wait a second.
What does that make?
You have to, like, everybody else has to win.
Right. Yeah, I know. We could just make him. It was like greatest of all time, top. I said, wait a minute, man. So if he's that, what is, you know, if you're doing that, what's Donovan Mitchell?
Right.
You know, what's Joel Embiid?
Right.
You know, what I mean, you know, but again, and these, and again, it's just another version of white supremacy that you kind of have to see yourself as at the top of the heap in everything, no matter what it is, you know. And the guy just can't be really, really good or even great. He's got to be the greatest of all time.
Or don't rush him. How about that? He's a 22-year-old kid. Yes, he's playing great. He, you know, for reference, he's averaging, you know, 30 for the playoffs. He averaged 35, 36 points, 8 rebounds, 10 assists. That's great. That's great. You know, that puts him up there with anybody. But LeBron was doing similar stuff before he won, okay? And the bar has always been, you got to win to do the, you know, you got to win to get your real credit. So just, you know, let him go through the natural progression of things. He might win a championship, and then you can go crazy, and, you know, we'll try to take it. But right now, it's just ridiculously too early. I mean, and then remember, he was traded for Trae Young.
That, you know, by the way, right, you know,
right, who did get to the second round?
Right. Who's still playing.
Yeah, now, who's still playing.
It's looking a little bleak against
I mean, it's 1-1. You know, last night looked bleak, but you know, Trae Young, and people are starting to mention that, you know, people who want to push back on the Luka narrative will mention, hey, you know, Trae Young made the second round.
And right. Well, and yeah, but you know,
yeah.
It's always,
I see somebody, well, what would Luka have done with Trae Young's supporting cast? Oh, right. Come on.
Right. Yeah, and now they're talking about, you know, firing the coach, you know. And when the reality is that the guy, like you said, is 22, 23, and he's got to mature.
Right.
He's got to really mature. And look, I said, you know, do I want to kind of bask in all this? Do I want to win? And right now, I think he's really loving being Luka and basking in all this stuff. And I don't see if they would bring in like a – somebody said, oh, well, maybe Giannis is like – could be his number two.
But didn't Giannis just sign a big deal? I mean, this is just like pipe dreams.
Yeah. But also, I mean, the idea that they've suggested he would be his number two. And
that's a good point.
I mean,
the two-time MVP, by the way.
Yeah. And I don't even know if he would want a number two. But anyway, enough of that. But it was just,
I got another story. How about another story along the same lines? You have Nikola Jokic, was just named the NBA MVP.
Yeah.
So you can get ready to hear some more commentary. You know, the commentary that goes, well, we love the way we love the way Jokic plays the game. He does it the right way. And, right. You know, he's just a joy. He's a joy to watch, you know.
Right. He's a joy to watch. Yeah, I guess he is, you know.
And again, I'm not saying – I actually think he deserved it. I actually think he deserved to win MVP this year, just mostly because he played every game. In a season where, like, Embiid was great, but he missed 20 games. Okay, right. and his stats are up there with anybody. Those Luka stats I just gave you, Jokic was doing that in the regular season. Okay, so I'll give him the credit. I would have voted for him, but it's just the reaction to it. Like, okay, that doesn't mean he's the most joyous player to watch ever, and he does everything the right way compared to other guys. Like, get out of here with that.
Yeah, it's just that there's just been this waiting for this White Hope. And the White Hope thing, there's such a deep history of the White Hope thing going all the way back to, you know, Jack Johnson and Jim Jeffries. You know, when Jack London, the writer, you know, after Johnson won the title from Tommy Burns, it's like, we're talking about 1910. You know, a writer says, you know, forcing Jim Jeffries to come out of retirement. You know, we want to wipe that golden smile off of Johnson's mouth. Jim Jeffries, it's up to you. You know, this guy was, Jim Jeffries on a damn alfalfa farm, retired. He would come back and say, this guy? Yeah. You know, but it was that whole great white hopeism that really hasn't died. And you kind of see it in everything, in every dimension, you know. Right. But particularly, you see it in the NFL and the NBA, wherever black people are dominant,
right,
it almost triggers this kind of fear of being overtaken, whether it's Obama winning the White House and people ready to like, oh my God, you know, or Kamala Harris. So
you're seeing the Kamala Harris stuff now. I've been watching the news a couple of days now, all of a sudden reports she's, you know, we don't like the way she's acting as vice president and all this kind of, yo, okay, here we go again.
Yeah. But I think you have to be, if you are a person of color, you know, if you're African, you know, you know, it's just inevitable. And right. So you can't be surprised. And I guess that's sort of the difference between, I you know, taking some of the kids, you know, who go to HBCUs and other kids, you know, who may go to PWIs, who may be, well, and that's probably not totally fair. But who are somehow surprised when, you know, when the rug is pulled out from under, you know, but they're just like stunned, you know. but back to the playoffs. So what do you think? Are you loving? Let's start out east. Are you loving the Brooklyn Nets? They're looking really great now after two games. Now, is there a game tonight?
There's a game tomorrow night. So they're off. For some reason, they get 2 days off where the West Coast teams don't get any days off, get only 1 day off the whole series. But
because they're in the West Coast, I figure they, at the, you know, warm weather.
Or maybe the league really wants the Nets to get in the finals. maybe they're like, we need these guys in the finals. Right. But no, I'm not there yet. I mean, if Harden were healthy, which he's not, and that's the hamstring, he's not going to be. Like, he'd be a miracle if he's like plays in the finals, you'd have to say that's pretty good. That's like, right. Wow, he did that. Because he was out for a month with the same injury prior. So, no, I mean, with just KD and Kyrie, I'm actually surprised what they're doing, what they've done to Milwaukee the first couple of games, especially that last game, complete blowout. I think it's kind of anyone's race. Almost anybody left can get to the finals and maybe win it out of both conferences. I guess Embiid's playing on that meniscus tear.
I know, it's unbelievable. You've had a torn meniscus, right?
No, Achilles. That's you're done with that. But you know, I talked to a friend, Damani Howell, who's
we had to have Damani on the show.
You should.
We have him on the show.
And he was saying, I asked him, you can play with a torn Achilles. I mean, a torn meniscus, and he was like, yeah, it's a pain, pretty much a pain threshold thing, you know. You can repair it later, but I mean, you know, it's a slight tear, so it's like it's just a pain management situation. So yeah. If that's the case at this point, maybe he makes it through the playoffs, and he's the real deal.
Yeah, I've had a torn meniscus couple, and there's this. I listened to Reggie Theus describe it the other day. It was pretty good, but it's like it's this tear, and the tear is kind of like a flap, and when the flap is kind of open and it's at your joint, you can kind of play, but it's just when it comes down, the cartilage comes down and it locks.
Right.
That's when it's over.
And you won't be able to move on it, basically.
Yeah, you can't move on it. So I guess the surgery is they shave it or something. But right now, clearly, it's, you know, with Embiid is at a point where he can play. I know that.
I don't know how long that lasts.
That's well, they, I know, you know, down Atlanta, praying like hell, you know.
He's scoring 40 points on it.
Oh, my God, looking Capella look ridiculous, you know. So Brooklyn, again, it doesn't matter whether they win by 80 points each time. You still got to win two games or a game in Milwaukee. Right. So we'll see. We'll see how that closes. Anything surprised you about the playoffs?
I'm surprised, the Clippers actually didn't choke and they actually
That's because I was willing them.
Yeah, we were willing them. And people forget Kawhi is a serious dude when it comes to when his back, especially when he needs to win a game.
What would happen if he were Luka? I mean, that's what I keep saying. What would they do if Kawhi was white, or if Donovan Mitchell were white? I mean, you know, I mean, if it's hard to imagine, but this, you know, what would they be saying if these guys see? That's why I think what Dennis Rodman a long time ago said, Larry Bird. Now, Larry Bird is a great player, but they say if he were black, there's such a norm, certain things, just like we expect you to do,
right?
You know, not that we would say you're great, but would we be saying, you know, again, that's what's kind of hard. You know, you're Donovan Mitchell doing all this stuff or Kawhi doing all this stuff, you know, and it's like saying,
I think that's part of it. Yeah, it's part of it too. I mean, there's definitely the racial part of it, the racial aspect. But part of it too, even black people get caught up, some black people get caught up in this too. It's like it's rare. So you get, you kind of like are like, in, you're like, wow, you're like caught up in it too. Like you're like, oh, we don't usually see this. Like,
black people do that a lot. If you have a white woman, I remember who sang, but man, she sings like a sister. Oh man, she dances just like a sister. You know, yeah, but Kawhi, you know, Kawhi looked tremendous. Even in game one.
Yeah.
Against
Kawhi takes, you know, all through like his recent, especially recent career, he's kind of like load managing, even when he plays every game, every in the playoffs. Like he take, like even for game one last night, it wasn't the same Kawhi we saw game six and seven. You know, no. He was like letting everybody, he was like, let me see what my teammates got. You know what I'm saying? I got to chill. You know, I just had to carry all two games. Let me see what you got this game.
Exactly.
When it comes down to it, when their back is against the wall, he's proven, he probably, you know, last year he had a bad game seven. That's the only one I can remember. But I mean, usually when his back is against the wall, he's going to come up as big as he needs to.
What would be, and again, when you talk about Kawhi, I was wondering what would be a greater accomplishment. I always thought that what put LeBron ahead of Michael, we'll indulge this argument, but why not?
Right.
He takes three different franchises to an NBA championship. You know, Miami, then goes back to Cleveland. You know, that in and of itself. And it goes to the Lakers and does that. But I'm wondering if Kawhi Leonard takes three different teams, you know, I don't know if he took San Antonio, but
he was on the ride at first, and then he became a big part of it.
Right. Then goes to Toronto.
Then he takes Toronto.
Takes Toronto. And the Clippers, man, I mean, they were barely a franchise.
If he takes the Clippers to a championship, which is possible, I mean, just talent-wise, right, which is possible, I mean, yeah, that puts him in a different
spot. What do you do with that? I mean, that's a pretty significant resuscitation.
Yeah, and it's the Clippers of all
franchises. The Clippers, you know, practice, you know.
Think about Toronto. Toronto wasn't a championship.
Right.
Like who?
Yeah, whoever
thought they'd say Toronto, the Toronto Raptors won the NBA championship. So he's already done it once.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I would like to see that. It would be interesting to the legacy.
Right.
And I guess because he doesn't really have a great media presence, it doesn't seem to necessarily want it.
No.
You know, that is his signature of not wanting. That's his style of not wanting it.
At all.
Which increases his price tag, because the more you say you don't want it, the more they're after you. You know, you always want what you can't have.
That's true. Giannis is, Giannis has been a surprise, but how poorly, not poorly throughout the game, but the free throws. I mean, the guy's shooting like 20% from the
free throw. Well, people fucking counting. But they're in Brooklyn, they even have the damn scoreboard. It's like the game show, kick, top. You know, I guess the NBA had to, like, come on, y'all can't do that.
You know? Heard about the NBA told them to take it down, right? You saw that?
Yeah. I'm sure everybody was stunned.
I saw that. I was like, wow, they're doing that? They're letting them do that?
Probably they would have like a meter at half, you know, at side court, like the shot clock, like have the Giannis clock, you know. To me, I don't know if, and unfortunately or fortunately, he's locked himself in to that.
Right.
So ain't no super team for Giannis. And ain't nobody coming to Milwaukee. I'm sorry.
And that was the thing about that series to me when people, you know, because, yeah, Milwaukee's playing great. They killed the Heat, even though the Heat, I think everybody went deep into that bubble last year, paid for it this year for the most part.
Yeah. Go ahead. We'll finish your thought. I want to ask you about that.
Yeah. So, but, you know, people said that, you know, Milwaukee matched up really well with Brooklyn, and I'm like, really? I'm like, I know Drew Holiday and Middleton are good players, but you know, someone was going through like the list of all stars and all pros that the Brooklyn Nets have. I think it was like a total of 30 or something crazy. And then you go to Middleton and Drew Holiday, and they have like two all stars in between them. I mean, there's a reason for that. So they're not really on the same level. So
yeah. But the point you made, I've been thinking about this. I mean, the bubble I thought was intriguing. I mean, obviously, historically, you never had it before, but it had, I don't know. Now that you've seen the bubble and now you've seen, you know, the difference the fans make, I mean, which we kind of knew it. I think still thinks fans are still morons. It was it harder playing in the bubble than playing in front of fans with the travel? I mean, yet. Guys like Tyler Hero and all these people. What's sort of your assessment of the bubble and whether it was harder, whether fans make it harder?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like it almost breaks even because, I mean, it was harder to some extent, and I guess it all depends on who you are and your personality and all that kind of stuff in terms of being secluded, right. Can't go anywhere. I think that is probably, you know, a guy like LeBron James, who's used to that stuff. Like, he, you know, he secludes himself. Like, if, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. if you're that hard, or even Jimmy Butler, like, if you're that hard a working guy, you know, it's probably great for you. You know what I'm saying? Oh, really? I didn't want distractions anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. This is perfect.
But then, like, if you're a regular NBA guy, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe, you know, it hurts you because you don't have your routine. But the big, to me, the big issue is how it affected this year was, remember what the NBA did. And, you know, obviously it's all about money, but they made them come back like they didn't have an offseason.
Well,
they
see, that's the whole thing.
Oh, right? You gave your offseason because of COVID. Now you had the bubble. So those teams that were in the bubble, and remember, they were playing very hard. All those games, we were all astounded. Oh, wow, the level of play is the same. It doesn't matter, which is true.
Right.
But they were playing that hard, and then they only gave them about a month and a half break to the next season, condensed 72 games into like a small period of time. So they were more like, you know, they don't have back-to-backs anymore, I don't think, but it was like, you know, every other day, every other day, every other day. So look at all the injuries we have. And it's like,
yeah, kind of ridiculous. Yeah, I don't think that's been talked about enough, man. I mean,
Anthony Davis, first of all, he's injury prone anyway. So imagine a month and a half off, and you were one of the last teams standing in the bubble. And then the Heat, look at the Heat. They played. They lost in the championship in the bubble. They had a terrible season, really. You know, they never could get it together with injuries and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but guess who had a good season?
The Celtics too were a Final Four in the bubble.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's right, Jalen Brown. Yeah, I mean, but I think it's this whole idea of players as these cogs,
right?
You know, whether you're a $40 million cog or whatever, you're a cog,
right?
And I guess, you know, you look at this how you make your living. Again, we said that last year that the players, athletes, whether it's in the NFL, are really hostage. They're hostage. They're held hostage to this stuff because you got to play. You know, while you and I are doing, you know, everybody's doing their Zoom from remote and all that kind of stuff. Let me ask you a question. Do you, and this is another thing that's come up about our business, media. I was speaking to somebody the other day. I don't know if we're going to ever get back what they took away from media, you know, access. You know, I don't know if we're going to ever get that access back. Because, you know, they've been trying to control that forever. What do you think? And how do you think you do your job in the COVID, in the Zoom era, where there is no locker room access, there's no random kind of opportunity to kind of bump into people in the hallways and all that?
Yeah, no, I'd be surprised if they give us that access back, because like you said, there's always been undertones of them trying to limit it. We already know that, you know, especially the superstars or the stars, they want to limit it and they want to tell their own story. So there's really no reason for them to not fight back against, you know, locker room access. And then the humanity of it. Like, I always thought the locker room,
I know,
like, itself was one of the weirdest.
It is weird.
Like, you know, you got scrums waiting for this dude, surrounding him, and he's at a small, this is a millionaire, a multimillionaire in a small little locker trying to put his underwear on under his towel while people have a microphone in his face.
That is just bizarre, you know.
Right.
You know, and I guess what you get out of a locker room sometimes could be, you know, I guess contacts or casual stuff. I don't know. You're right. It's that scene was always dehumanizing, and they don't do it in the WNBA. They don't have like hordes of people waiting for these women to undress, or to, you know, in various stages of disrest, and then you get that. You know, it's like very humanizing.
And it doesn't even matter who you are. I remember, you know, being in, like, you know, in the Patriots playing the Jets. I'm in the Patriots visiting locker room, and it's like Tom Brady has to go through it. Like,
exactly.
Like, wow. I was like, they'll do it to anybody. Like, he, Tom Brady is at a skinny little visitor's locker trying to get dressed. Like, what in the world? While people are trying to talk to him. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that to me is bizarre. So I guess now that you mention it, do we want to go back to that?
But will we even, what kind of access will we get, right? Like, so people are saying, oh, they should at least bring everybody, but then they have control over that, right? So I think, it does change the way you cover. You're going to have to go through back channels. You're going to have to create good relationships with the Stars team.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. But this gives this gives, I guess, players much more control.
Right.
Which I guess you could argue they should have the control of franchises. I mean, I just don't know whether it, the media in general, does it impede, you know, we're supposed to be the fifth estate that keeps everything honest.
Right.
And maybe we have to reevaluate what kind of job have we, you know, have we been doing at that. So, yeah, but I just don't know if we're going to ever get that back. Again, that kind
I doubt it. I mean, I guess part of it depends on how much the media tries to fight back when they do try to take it away. You know, it all depends. But I don't think they're willingly going to go back to the way it was.
No. And like you said, the crowd of locker rooms, I could always do without that.
Right.
You know,
but at the same time, I've gotten great interviews in that you know, while the scrum is with some all around somebody else, and then somebody you want to talk to that you would never have access to if you weren't in that locker room. So
that it gets 50-50 because you can't go in. You know, you may be working a story and you just may need to talk to like the 15th guy on the bench about something else. Now, I guess they could arrange that for you. Or if you've got the guy's mobile or whatever, you can text, hey, can we talk? Then it depends on whether, you know, the franchise comes down on him and says, no, you can only talk to who we say you can talk to.
And you know they'll do that.
Oh, yeah, in a minute. If you don't have the power to, you know, unless you're like a handful of guys who are untouchable, everybody else could be shipped off to Siberia, you know, at any given time, you know.
So I was thinking it might be a situation where they only let ESPN in the locker room or
right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, TNT, whoever's covering the game. So I could see him that kind of starting.
Yeah. What else we got, man? Any other thing jumped out at you?
The NFL recently with the race norming. In terms of how they review players' claims for, you know, cognitive injuries. So you have obviously the NFL had a big settlement. They were getting sued left and right by all kind of players based on head injuries and the effect that they had after playing. So they settled the case, but in terms of dishing out the settlement dollars, they used what is called race norming, which assumes that black players start out with lower cognitive function than some of their white counterparts in terms of the $1 billion settlement of brain injury claims. The practice made it harder for black retirees to show a deficit and qualify for an award. The standards were created in the 1990s in hopes of offering more appropriate treatment to dementia patients, but critics faulted the way they were used to determine payouts in the NFL concussion case. More than 2,000 NFL retirees have filed dementia claims, but fewer than 600 have received awards. More than half of NFL retirees are black.
Yeah, because what they're saying is that, well, you were stupid to begin with.
Right.
So, you know, you were kind of dumb anyway. So
just because you're black.
Yeah, because you're black, you're dumb anyway. You start dumber anyway. So how far can you drop? You know, and it's even me, I mean, when you look at it, it's, man, how racist right in front of our face. You know, and it's like the 90s. We're not talking about 1955 or something. And for some reason, I guess I should fault myself. That should have been like headline news. Like NFL thinks black players are basically mentally inferior.
Right. And now, not too many people are talking about this.
Yeah, we should actually, because, you know, it's one of those topics that it's offensive, but it's not like we talk about Luca or that kind of stuff. But it all feeds into the same sort of thing. It's the flip side of white supremacy.
And it's not, and it's far from just a sports story, right? Because it's like, you're talking about the medical profession and the legal profession, that it's all wrapped up in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you're in COVID and you see the treat. There was just something that came out about, even with the Red Cross, that white victims were treated differently and more quickly than black victims of emergencies, you know.
I don't think there's an issue that exists in this country or wherever, and in most countries, where not one issue where there's not there, you know, the where people of color, black people in particular, aren't discriminated against in ridiculous, you know, fashions and turn, you know, right in front of your eyes. Like there's so much of that.
Right.
And that goes back to the sports thing. Why it's so bothersome even to see, like, we see it coming. You know what I'm saying? Like before, like we know the Luka stuff that you're saying that these guys are all lauding him and, you know, saying he's different and he's the greatest ever. We knew you were going to say that before. So it's even more frustrating. We knew before it came out of your mouth, you were going to say that. So Just be, you know, maybe be more original, hide it a little better, do something.
Yeah. And the unrepentant nature of it, I guess, is the thing, you know, because it is so predictable. It's happening. It's just, And I was thinking about that today. You know, this thing is, you know, look at COVID. And you know, a year ago, we talked about George Floyd and the marches and all our white friends were like, so what do you do? And, you know, blah, 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 the rappers, you know. And, you know, and now, and that's our short memory. Right. It's like, okay, that was that fad. You know, like, you know, some white people will go to school and they'll date like a person of color as their kind of like experience, you know, you know, and then, oh, well, all right, we did that.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, so now it's like, ah, right, well, yeah, it was a good experience, you know, I'm in the Peace Corps and I marched and, you know, I got thrown in jail, you know, you know, and now it's kind of, all right, you go back to being white and privileged, you know, and,
we always, you know, it's tough to give that privilege, we know that.
Oh yeah, are you kidding me? No matter who you are, that's why a lot of people saying that. POTUS 45 was saying that. Listen, you know, are you sure you want to give up your privilege?
Right.
You know, think of what that means.
Right.
That white privilege. Before you start, you know, oh yes, I'm a victim. You know, you think about, and I think a lot of people have, and they're right. Like, I really not want to have, you know, a standard of living, you know, a house. You know, couples, you know, house, when the next emergency comes, you know, you have a house to escape to, a second and third residence.
Right. Schools.
Great, the best schools, you know, and do you really want to give that up? You know, well, can we just make sure that there's enough for everybody? Yeah, no. And it kind of gets back to sports in a way, because that's where, at least marginally, the field is kind of level, in a way, you know, it's kind of level in a way.
Right. Well, yeah.
Basketball. I mean, baseball, they made it so expensive. I mean, you got a son playing Little League, and if Kareem wants to continue to play baseball, man, that's like, it's going to cost a fortune.
Right.
You know, the traveling teams and the separate car. I mean,
I'm staring him towards basketball.
You should steer him toward golf and tennis.
That's true too. Those are expensive too, though.
Yeah, but you got
it. No, I actually want him to play all sports.
They play piano too.
Yeah, and instruments, everything, acting, whatever you want to do.
Acting, everything, whatever.
And school, most importantly.
And schoolwork, just as a fallback, you know, just be brilliant, you know. Anyway, so I'm glad you brought up the NFL thing, because it's an important story, but it's not a sexy story. But it's a story about racism. It's a story about how white people, this white power structure, sees, you know, and sees black athletes. It's very little, but just cattle, you know, it's kind of livestock.
Yeah, and there's a reason why it's not a big story, right? Because it's so obvious. What that is, you've got to, if I'm a white guy, I got to be embarrassed. I can't put that on my paper on the front. Like, this is embarrassing. Like not embarrassing. We got caught red-handed. Like, what are we doing?
Right. You know, yeah, I feel bad because I'm like, go all the way back to Rebbe. Who name some people? Who was the person who said, yeah, this is a good idea. Let's do this.
And I'll look more into it, but I guarantee you, it seems more like either a medical or legal doctrine. You know what I'm saying? So it was probably something that was used in other industries. And then when it came to, you know, settlements for football players, they just plugged it right in.
Yeah. And I guess in the tobacco industry, they had to show, I mean, it was very vicious. We had to show that you were already smoking or something.
Right.
To, you know, it's like a, in rape victims and how the prosecutors depending, you know, if you were representing the accused rapist, then they had to paint the victim.
Oh yeah, and they still do that.
In a certain way. Now, same thing. You want to claim that playing football caused your dementia. And then, well, wait a minute, you were stupid to begin with. Right. You know, you're always a D student, you know.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, like just like anything else, like they're going to protect the few white guys in that situation also.
So. All right. So anyway, all right, man. Well, listen, we have some playoffs this week. Today is, we're recording this on a Wednesday.
Any more games for you?
I went to games. I went to a game at the Garden. Game at the thing, and they blew out the Nets. So I said, well, let me see what happens in the series. Because if they can continue to wipe out Milwaukee, right, then who's the next? Who will Brooklyn have to play? Now, they have to play Philadelphia or Atlanta, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and yeah, that could be.
Brooklyn Philly would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, Brooklyn Philly would really be nice. Yep. That'd be a nice, hateful.
lots of water bottles being thrown.
I know, yeah. And I was thinking of how many black coaches potentially you could have so in the Final Four.
We got Nate McMillan. Yeah. And Doc Rivers, Nate McMillan. So you're guaranteed one in the Eastern Conference Finals. And Ty Lue. Ty Lue, Monty Williams. Those two could meet up in the Western.
Oh, Monty Williams, yeah.
Right, for Phoenix, they could.
You could have out west. Yeah, you could have Ty Lue and Monty Williams.
Yep, but like you said, like there's a scenario in that Final Four where you have three black coaches.
Yeah, which I think we can make something out of that.
Yeah, you know? I mean, especially considering you have so few to percentage wise to begin with. If you get if four of them make the conference finals, that's right. Something.
You have only five black coaches, and three of the five right. Are in the finals.
Right.
And you're saying, what's the problem here?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
obviously, they
can do it. You know, yeah, I mean, you know, that is kind of off here, you know.
So, right.
You know, yeah. And then your Budenholzer is probably going to get fired. You know, and they're talking about what's they going to Portland, Chauncey Billups.
Yeah. Jason Kidd might, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up with the Laker job.
What they're going to fire? What?
I mean, I haven't heard anything, but it just wouldn't be shocked because remember Jason Kidd, Damon Lillard said he wanted Jason Kidd as the Portland coach.
Right. Then he immediately said, "I don't want to go to Portland."
Yeah, he said, "I don't want to go." Why don't you want to go? You don't want to. You want a coaching job, right? Maybe he thinks he has something better coming.
Yeah, or Boston. That's funny too. You know, Brad, who is a nice guy and all that kind of stuff, but it's so classic. You know, you kind of fail upwards. You know, all right, well, you fail. Okay, we're going to make you the president of the team, you know.
Right. I heard a good theory, though. I forget where I heard it, but they realized things weren't working. Like, you know, things weren't working. He wasn't connected with the team. So instead of firing him, they just move him, keep him in the organization as a president so that Milwaukee won't get him.
Oh, as a head coach.
Yeah. We don't want to coach against you.
Yeah, he could always turn it down. I mean, he didn't have to take that. He said, no, I don't want to do that job. I'll just offer my resignation.
Yeah.
And wait till they fire Budenholzer and move to Milwaukee.
Yeah. I mean, and I always liked Brad Stevens as a coach ever since he was at Butler, what he was doing there. Yeah. I mean, he won like 70% of his games at Butler, had him in two national championships, Butler of all teams.
Of all people.
And even with the Celtics, they never had a team, This year he underperformed, but the rest of those teams weren't even supposed to get to where they got. So I'll give him credit there. It just shows you up. But for GM, you know, people saying he's not qualified. Who is qualified for GM when they get those jobs? Like, you know, what are the qualifications to be a GM? Like, they give it to any white guy. Yeah. Seems like.
Yeah. Credentials only become an issue when all of a sudden black people, start claiming, I don't know, is he done? You know, same thing in head coaches in the NFL. You never had any coordinator experience and you never had, I do want to acknowledge, speaking of the NFL, the passing of Jim Fossil.
Yes.
Somebody who, you cover these guys, again, is a decent guy.
Right.
He passed away early this week.
Right.
So, and a very good friend of mine, his son, coached with his son.
Oh, wow.
They were both starting out in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his coach is a coach somewhere, right?
His son is coaching somewhere. I've seen that.
I think, yeah. So, just kind of condolences to that family. So the beat goes on,
Yep.
And, pulling for Ty Lue, pulling for Mighty Williams, pulling for Doc again, and really pulling for Nate. You know, maybe they'll take the intern tag off his name. Grant Hill is part owner. Maybe Grant will kind of.
Well, reportedly, I saw Stephen A. Smith say that he said that they already have an agreement. They're just waiting to announce it. He is going to be the full time coach moving forward. They couldn't not do that.
How could you not do that?
Yeah, you can.
So, good for Nate. All right, man. Well, listen, Jamal. Hope you enjoy the rest of the week and just rest of the playoffs, and enjoy those little league games.
That's right. We'll be. There'll be more playoff games, so we'll be back. Let's see what the Nets are doing. See if they can handle business. If they're as good as they look. Of course, thanks for listening to the show. Keep listening. Keep supporting. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BrosPod and all that good stuff. Keep giving us good ratings. And the show, of course, was brought to you by Bet Online. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe we should go now that COVID is over. Maybe we go back to Chocolat and do a live broadcast.
We should
from Chocolat.
Maybe one of the days when the Nets are playing, we can see all the, of course it's so funny in New York City. Like the Nets are a national story,
right. But
they can be. Game two. I was at game two. They still had tickets. People, you were able to buy $50 tickets to get in the game.
Yeah, no, I can believe it. It's like the Clippers and the Lakers,
right?
Which would be funny. Wouldn't it be funny if the Clippers played the Nets?
It would make perfect sense.
And it's so perfect. The number two team, and it really wouldn't matter if the Clippers won or the Nets won. The team is still the Lakers, and the Knicks.
Right.
Remember after game two, after the Knicks. Fans won one game. They're talking about we want Brooklyn.
I thought they'd won the championship. They were people out on Broadway like putting each other on their shoulders and chances. I'm like, what? They won one playoff. I was embarrassed to be a former Knicks fan.
Well, the Black Lives Matter rally. But that's just how Knicks. It's just amazing. No sense of reality at all.
At least the Lakers makes more sense to me. The Laker Clipper dynamic, because the Lakers actually been winning all through the past.
Yeah, I mean they just won a championship yesterday. I mean last year.
The Knicks have not won anything in my lifetime. That's what I was saying. By the teams I grew up rooting for, the Knicks, the Mets, and the Jets, right. The Knicks and the Jets, I'm not really a fan anymore. And the Mets, I am. And I think it's the reason is that they actually won in my lifetime. Like, I actually saw that happen. And I guess I'm still emotionally tied to the Mets for some reason.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? And I tell my nephew, he said, "You got one? It's time to change. Cheer for Milwaukee or something, you know?
Right.
Or Atlanta, you know."
I have bad luck because I grew up in a Philadelphia Eagles fan also. And then I stopped being like when McNabb fought, you know, because I had a good run. I had Randall Cunningham.
Yeah.
Then I had McNabb. And then once that transition started, the end of McNabb's career, I kind of like, I didn't care about the Eagles anymore. Then that year they win a Super Bowl. I'm like, wow, I'm not even a fan anymore.
Yeah, man, I stopped being a fan at age 16.
That's smart.
I'm going to be a journalist.
Right.
Because I was really emotionally, you know, the Bears, not so much, the Dallas Cowboys. I really liked the Dallas Cowboys because when they first came in the NFL, they're a young team. I liked Dallas. And in a short period of time, they got to the championship game against Green Bay in 66 and lost in the famous Ice Bowl game. And then they played again in 67 and looks like they were going to win. And I can remember like it was yesterday, Mike Gechter, something in the end zone. And that day, it was heart-wracking. So, you know what? I'm done. I'm not putting this kind of emotional in something I cannot control.
Right.
And so I said, I'll be a journalist so I can just root for the story, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree. I always think that that's perfect. At 16, that's about the age you should stop. 16 to 18, you should stop being a fan. Yeah. Because it is it's a childish thing.
Yeah, 25 years old, wearing over. That's how you doing that, you know? You're painting my face and then, I said, no, are you kidding me? You know, now this is all about the story. You know, does this work for me? You know, does your winning the championship or being good that night work for my column, you know?
Right. No.
If I was going to do a piece on Luka.
You're your own fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan of me, and right. I'm a fan of the fans. I mean, I'm a fan of
the game in general.
Yeah. I remember if Chris Jackson's reading this, the great editor, my great editor of 40 Million Dollar Slaves and of this forthcoming book. Chris, I got the lead, but it was, I was in Boston, and the Yankees had just, Boston just beaten the Yankees, and that's back when there was like a blood feud. I mean, Red Sox, but they were both good, and they had just beaten the Yankees in like a walk-off or something, and Fenway was just going berserk. And I left the stadium maybe an hour or so afterwards, and the fans were just still celebrating. They were just drinking, and I'm leaving the stadium, and I was thinking about my column. So I got in on time, and, I was just thinking about what I wrote, as I was going back to my car with no expression in the midst of this utterly euphoric chaos. And so a woman came up to me, been drinking, and she looked, she said, "Who are you for?" And then I realized, I said, I'm not for anybody. I thought about it, I'm not for anybody. I'm basically for whoever reads this column. Right. And did I capture the moment, the euphoria, if you were a Boston fan, or the dejection of your Yankee, that's where I'm, did I hit it? That's who I'm for.
Right.
But that's what it dawned on me. I said, man, you're not for anybody. maybe the pandemic, I did, during the pandemic, I mean, I think sports did, because there was nothing. Remember, there was a period of time, man, there was like nothing.
Yeah, we watched like replays, remember?
Yeah, we remember the last day. We just watched anything. Right. And I guess it maybe made us realize how empty our fucking miserable lives were, because it made you realize, and maybe that's an American thing in the United States. We deal with, we're so much in unreality. I mean, that's what we're known for, not dealing with shit, whether it's race. We don't like things to be messy.
Right.
Whether it's like the George, that's why George Floyd was so like, damn, man. I mean, you couldn't, this guy gets like murdered by the police. I'm like, it's like right there, And we typically like to say, over there in China is terrible, And I think that But for that period of year in COVID, man, there was like no diversions. There was no NFL. There was no nothing. You just had to deal with these people, these kids marching and the brutality and even with COVID, how all these people of color were like, couldn't get access to anything. They were dying, couldn't get access to medical treatment. And all these rich white folks or just white, you know, were like, you know, getting the best care. They were going out to the Hampton, you know, I mean, you know, they were going to higher ground and like, you know, and it just put all this stuff like right in front of his face, like this, what's the word? Inequities. The inequities were just blatant in the land of the free and home of the brave. And so now we're back to normal. Phew, don't have to watch that movie anymore. You know, we kind of go, you know, instead of just watching one channel.
Right.
Okay, we can go back to watching 5 million channels. We have to deal with it. Stay away from that channel. We don't want to see that channel anymore. The black channel. We don't want to see that anymore. You know.
Unless they entertaining us. That's it.
Yeah. Well, even in entertainment, you know, these guys are entertainers, but now they kneeling. What? These guys are like, kneeling? And Jesus Christ, we want to come and we want to escape. And now they're fucking kneeling and raising their fists and painting Black Lives Matter all over the backboard, you know, and God, you know, I mean, I keep thinking of the Utah fans, right? And remember, it was when one of the guys last year, or when Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I remember that.
Got to an altercation with his white fan. And, you know, you guys, he ain't the only one. Now, he may be the only one who was drunk enough or belligerent enough to say, but you have all these, and I keep looking at all these arenas, all these white fans, you know, only like, you know, like probably I'd say, I don't know, 97%.
Right.
White fans and 99% black players. And that's black, it's always been, that's always a volatile dynamic. I'm like, what the hell? How do you reconcile that shit? You know, and maybe it's an agreement that, okay, the black players, we won't call any attention to it. And we all just will imagine that it doesn't exist. That it's all good. You know, we kind of put you through something during COVID, but we're done. Okay, we're done. You come back to the arenas. There's no Black Lives Matter stuff anywhere. You come, right. You know,
but the fans can still shout racist shit at you. That's fine.
Well, they can racist, or they murmur it, or what is it during the last series? They at Utah fans gave what's the name's parents a hard time. The star of the Memphis team. What's his name?
John Morant.
John Morant. Yeah, they were like giving his damn. I mean, this was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. On just like blatantly racist stuff.
Right.
No subtlety, no nothing. Just blatantly racist stuff. Like it was 1860.
Yeah. So how do you, but then you cheer for Donovan.
Yeah, then Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, to, you know, he actually, he the next game he had Ja Morant's family in, you know, courtside. And took complete care of him himself.
Yeah, but it's just a bizarre dynamic.
Right.
If you ask me, why would you say racist? Would you say, what would you say to Don? Well, he's our Negro. Yeah. You know?
Well, yeah, that's what they say until he gets traded.
Until he gets traded, then would you? You're right. Would you same shit?
Exact same shit.
You're a borrowed time.
Don't get it twisted.
Yeah. Don't think that we actually like you as a human. Like you date my daughter. So.
No.
Just know your place. So
now you never know. Some of these fans are so crazy. They wouldn't even, they'd probably be okay with him dating their daughter until he gets traded.
Yeah. Well, step up. Could you get us free tickets? Yeah.
Exactly.
Season tickets. Well, can you put us at the, well, like OJ. Oh, yeah. Let's.
Yeah. OJ reference. We gotta get out of here.
All right, everybody. Hey, Jamal, have a great week, everybody. Have a great week. Still be careful and pray. God bless everybody. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.